Wednesday, the 21st of March, 2012. Margaret Whitlam is dead. Tony Abbott picks up her still-warm corpse and uses it to thump her grieving husband. Comedian Bill Bailey says what I think about classical music. And we top the party goat for Harmony Day. This is the 9pm Edict. Mel Tankard Reist. That's a person, apparently. I'm not entirely sure what she does or what purpose she serves. Tankard Reist sounds like some sort of yeast infection that's rife amongst brewery workers, doesn't it? Now, sex. Sexpo was held in Sydney last week, the Sexuality Lifestyle Expo, and on Twitter I did say that I'd be interviewing Ron Jeremy for this episode. He's the legendary porn star and director, and later he's been more famous for his cameo roles in other movies. Sorry, that interview didn't happen. I picked up some extra writing gigs later in the week, and I decided to deal with them and get paid, so next time. And I'll tell you more about next time a little later. What else? Ah, yes, today is Harmony Day. Now, unless you're the parent of a primary school-aged child and you're an Australian, you may, at this point, quite rightly ask, what the fuck is Harmony Day? Well, I shall tell you. It's a thing made up by the Australian government to, quote, create a spirit of inclusiveness and help ensure all Australians are treated fairly regardless of their cultural background or circumstance. Gee, well, that's worked a treat, hasn't it? But it's mostly for primary school children, and its conceptual framework is appropriately sophisticated. Here's this year's community service announcement, which was something that you possibly saw via some medium called television.
Harmony is a game we can all play.
It doesn't matter if you're a spectator or a player.
It doesn't matter if you're a male or female.
It doesn't matter if you have two legs or two wheels.
On the sporting field, all that matters is the game. So kick a goal.
Hit a six and get involved.
Visit the Harmony Day website to register your event for 21 March.
Harmony Day. Everyone belongs.
Play.
Engage. Inspire.
Yes, that's the theme this year, sport. Play, engage, inspire, with some porn-esque theme music in the background. Now, that last part there, play, engage, inspire, there should be a special circle of hell reserved for people who make up those three-word slogans. There should be a global boycott on any organisation, business or non-profit, that uses one of those three-word slogans. Dear marketers, it is so goddamn fucking lazy and unoriginal. There was a time when this may have been original. Liberty, égalité, fraternité. Know when that's from? Well, no one knows for sure, but certainly it was in use by the end of the 1830s, nearly 200 years ago. So when you tell a client that you're going to use a three-word slogan, you won't ever charge them for that, will you? Because you haven't actually done any work yet. Now, I think I'll skip over the other sheer laziness here, the idea that we could gasp, play sport at school to teach harmony, because as we all know, there's a complete absence of sport in Australian primary schools. Australia's desperately short of sport. No, it's one aspect of the Harmony Day message from Senator Kate Lundy, someone that I usually have a fair amount of respect for, that I want you to consider.
Hi, I'm Senator Kate Lundy, and I'm at the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra today to talk about Harmony Day, a wonderful annual event where all Australians can celebrate our nation's diversity and share what we have in common. The Harmony Day theme for this year is sport, play, engage, inspire. Sport is a powerful tool that can bring people from all walks of life together to share in a common passion and strive for a common goal. Sport fosters a wonderful sense of belonging and acceptance and helps build bridges of understanding and respect. This Harmony Day, get involved in sport. It's a great way to meet people, and team sport teaches all of us that everyone belongs.
Hi, I'm Monia Gerard, and I play for the Australian National Netball Team, the Diamonds. This year I'm getting involved in Harmony Day, and I hope you do too.
So show your support by wearing an orange t-shirt,
or catch a ball,
or shooting a goal.
Nice shot.
Thanks.
Join us on Harmony Day on the 21st of March and spread the message.
Sport. Play, engage, inspire.
Now, just in case you were wondering, all that squeaking and clanking in the background there wasn't that Senator Lundy had slinged up for the occasion. No, it was some sort of basketball or netball game going on there in the background at the Australian Institute of Sport. And that's what I want to talk about, the Australian Institute of Sport, that glorious pork fest of free money to people who want to pursue the self-indulgent career of playing games for a living. Now, what happens after that glorious high-profile career burns out when they hit 30 after making millions of dollars in sponsorships, appearance fees, prize money, and surreptitious transactions in back alleys after the game? Well, they then join the oversaturated market for sports commentators, spokespeople for allegedly healthy food products that are really oozing sugar from every orifice, and C-grade celebrities to make guest appearances on Dancing with the Stars. Explain to me again why we need a government subsidy for that? Whereas if someone wants to be a doctor or a nurse or a teacher or an engineer or a scientist, they leave university deeply in debt. And in the case of scientists, eager to be employed at a salary that comes within cooey of the median wage and fighting off the suicide-inducing depression that comes from the realisation that they'd have been better off financially if they just left school at 15 and joined a road gang. Or just become a drug dealer. Explain to me again why the Australian Institute of Sport deserves to exist at all. Now, while I was researching this segment, yes, I do research. Why are you so surprised about that? I came across a delightful site. Delightful is very much in air quotes. See, I've got my fingers up in the air now. Three-word quotes, it was called, with the subhead, three-word quotes as inspirational gifts. Now, prepare yourself. This is what it says on the front of this site, and I quote, three-word quotes are inspiring words to give as motivational gifts. They play a wonderful role to motivate and inspire oneself and others. They act as tools of encouragement. So, motivation is about encouragement. This is a bloody insight, isn't it? They act as tools of encouragement to stay optimistic, motivated, and focused. Oh, so the motivating things create motivation. It's even a bigger insight, isn't it? They are great to use as affirmations for daily encouragement. They helps you visualize, this is a direct quote, they helps you visualize your success with ease. An effective way for self-motivation is to use three-word quotes often. So start using three-word quotes to improve, with a capital I, your self-confidence and self-esteem. Three-word quote in any form, well, that's another direct quote, three-word quote in any form is an intention setter. Send out your intentions to the universe using three-word quotes. Three-worded quotes, well, now worded quotes, not word quotes, but three-worded quotes on, and this is the stuff, magnets, stickers, mugs, mouse pads, posters, postcards, cards, postage, T-shirts, bags, aprons, postage. Why postage? What's this postage stuff for? Anyway, they make great inspirational gifts in bold type for family, friends, and business associates, end quote. Now, here are some of the three-word quotes that are bound to motivate you. They certainly motivated me. Life is awesome. Do your best. Never give up. Success is yours. Thought is free. And they attribute that one to William Shakespeare, so you know it's good, right? Remember to live. That one's by Goethe. I thoroughly advise this. Remember to live, okay? Because, you know what happens if you forget. And they sell these three-word quotes as, I said, magnet, stickers, mugs, mouse pads, posters, postcards, cards, T-shirts, bags, and aprons. And this is the best bit I like. Round and square, you have a choice of sterling silver pendant necklaces. Well, I can picture this now. Here's someone struggling through their life. Depression has set in. That heavy, physical, soul-sucking fatigue that makes it almost impossible to get out of bed in the morning. That deadness of heart that so suffuses your being that even when your best-loved friend calls, You don't even answer the phone because everything seems so completely and utterly pointless. Everything that you've ever enjoyed is forgotten. Into that dark grey world of gloom, a package arrives. You open it. And there's a little silver pendant with a picture of a bright pink snowflake and the slogan, "Dreams come true." For fuck's sake, would you be inspired by that? I know I wouldn't be. Actually, I would be inspired. I'd be inspired to find out who sent me that piece of exploitative bullshit, go around to their house, kick their fucking front door in, find where they were hiding and beat the living shit out of them. That's what I'd be fucking well inspired to do. Jesus fucking whip. Inspiration is not an endlessly repeated and retweeted stream of shallow platitudes, the sort of crap that used to be confined to the pages of your desk calendar. Inspiration is something that so changes your life that it gives you a completely new worldview. It transforms you and what you do. And that's not something that happens every day. And it's certainly not something that happens as the result of $31.75 plus postage. Now, I said exploitative. Exploitation is precisely what this shit is. It's selling people on the false hope that if only they find the right slogan to live by, they'll be transformed. They'll be lifted out of their gloom. But that won't happen. They'll end up buying another of these overpriced trinkets and another and another. And people who sell this shit, people who make money off vulnerable people trying to find their way out of the depths of despair, do you know what I think of people like that? Yeah, well, I know you know. I don't need to spell it out. And I wonder about people calling every fiddly new concept they encounter inspiring. What exactly did it inspire you to do? And how's that going? I've just been looking through some of the reviews of the Dreams Come True pendant. There's some sad, sad people out there, but this is my favourite. This is from Anna. "Sure, I could have made a necklace for my mother-in-law with my son's picture, but it was important to me that it be water-resistant since she has such an active lifestyle." I don't even know where to begin with that. I'd also like to thank the patrician on Twitter, Brad A, for noting that the colour for Harmony Day is orange. The kids go off to primary school wearing orange t-shirts or an orange wristband or some other such tolerance-inducing device. And he notes that if orange is peace and harmony, we could just dump a shitload of Agent Orange on Afghanistan and instant peace and harmony. Well, it worked in Vietnam. The Last Night of the Proms was on ABC TV the other day. That's the thing where a bunch of toffed-up poms invade the Albert Hall, where an orchestra plays all of the Pax Britannia hit tunes that hark back to the days of empire. Here's a snippet.
it's March number one, rather better known as Land of Hope and Glory. And Susan Bullock is about to come to the stage, resplendent in the dress we've been promised, designed by Sue Chapman and Claire Grootveld, to sing Rule Britannia by Thomas Arne.
Oh, no, you fucking don't, Susan Bullock. We'll leave it right there. Rule fucking Britannia, my ass. Now, as it happens, a couple of days ago, I was deep under the control of the Black Dog and doing what one normally does on such occasions, which is lying in bed watching random bullshit on YouTube. And I came to the conclusion that the entirety of modern British TV and radio is the same set of around a dozen or so former comedians appearing on each other's talk shows and game shows. Stephen Fry has QI with Alan Davis and guests like Sean Locke and Paul Merton and Bill Bailey and the like. Sean Locke has a show called TV Heaven Telly Hell, and Stephen Fry and Alan Davis appear as guests. David Mitchell appears on those programs, but he also has a Radio 4 show called The Unbelievable Truth and has guests like Alan Davis and Sean Locke. Paul Merton had Room 101 and all of those people as guests. Incestuous is hardly the word. So I have, of course, set myself the personal challenge of watching every single one of these programs and drawing a diagram, because that's the sort of sad loser cunt that I am. But on this pathway, on one episode of TV Heaven Telly Hell, I caught Bill Bailey, who, of course, has also appeared on all of the other programs. Bill Bailey made this very pertinent point about Last Night of the Proms.
And you're a musical man. I mean, yes. What's the problem with it?
I can't bear the... just the toffery, the smugness, the general, very lovely time, the middle class affected level of privilege that seems to imbue everyone's every pore and know and detest everything that it stands for.
The end. The audience generally are very well educated.
Yes.
Terrible, very, very self-conscious. I don't know what they're drinking, but it's not strong enough.
No. Let's go mental, Toby. Right, Al.
Bunty Frobisher.
Come on. I'm wearing an amusing tie. Look at that. That's their equivalent of a mosh pit, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It seems like it passed its sell-by date a bit. And what I think the thing is that I don't like about it is the fact that the kind of middle class... kind of upper middle class kind of level of privilege and hijack the whole notion of classical music.
So you think it puts people off?
Puts people off, yeah. Yes, they see that, they go, oh, God, it's got... Oh, no, it's not for me. Whereas that, it may well be.
Hey, he's got a point, this Mr. Bill Bailey. Classical music is owned and run by the upper middle class through organisations that make it expensive because they wrap it up in all the symbols of privilege. Massive concert halls, champagne opening nights, highly paid music directors who really just pick their favourite tunes from the catalogue and print a brochure, and organisations like the Australia Council that divert the vast majority of their taxpayer-funded grant money towards propping up this entire corrupt apparatus. There's even a radio network of the ABC broadcasting this music that's listened to by, what, from memory, 2% of the population. Now, I don't think that all of this should be replaced by vapid populism, but it's not even Australian culture. It's the culture of Western Europe from a century and a half ago, and the culture of privileged Western Europe from when music was no longer the chamber music of the royalty, but the new music of the masses, that is, the emerging middle class masses, who gathered not in the royal chambers, but larger town concert halls. And indeed, the symphony orchestra is the size it is, double the size and more of a chamber orchestra, precisely because the music needed to be louder to fill the bigger venue. And once or twice a year, the proles are allowed to experience it. You know, we have Last Night of the Proms fed out to the masses in Hyde Park from the folks who can't afford the tickets to the Albert Hall, or we get Opera in the Domain in Sydney. And the entire thing gets a massive government subsidy for every single seat. Every single seat in a performance by Opera Australia is subsidised by the government to something like $100. Imagine the outcry if a Powderfinger gig or a Hilltop Hoods gig got $100 a person subsidy from the government. It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't be allowed to happen. There's no joke there, sorry, it just needed to be said. Now, as you'll have heard over the weekend, Margaret Whitlam died. Here's just a few comments from Sky News.
She died in Sydney today at the age of 92, leaving behind an enduring legacy as an author, patron of the arts, and a passionate defender of women's rights.
A champion athlete, outspoken, a social campaigner, a national treasure. Margaret Whitlam, it said, rewrote all the rules on being the Prime Minister's wife.
She's made a real impression on this Australia.
The Prime Minister, someone called Gillard, said a few words. It's a shame that no one involved in shooting the Prime Minister's tribute thought to tell her the wind uplift in her hair made her look a bit stupid. But then some bloke called Tony Abbott had to say a few words.
Margaret was a marvellous consort to a very significant Labor leader and an epochal Australian Prime Minister. There was a lot wrong with the Whitlam government, but nevertheless, it was a very significant episode in our history, and Margaret Whitlam was a very significant element in the political success of Gough Whitlam. She was a great patron of the arts. She was a woman of style and substance, and we should mourn her passing as we extend our deep sympathies to her friends, to her family, and especially to her husband.
Now, hang on, there's one bit in there that doesn't quite feel right.
There was a lot wrong with the Whitlam government.
Well, maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. But politics aside, what sort of low-life cunt has a go at a man and his work the day his wife dies? Well, Tony Abbott, apparently. For fuck's sake, Mr. Abbott, have you heard the phrase, a time and a place? Just scroll back through the last few days and have a bit of a think about what you just did. I think an apology might be in order. You know, I've been thinking about that in the last few days and pondering, Tony Abbott, what would have happened if he'd continued at the seminary? What sort of priest would he have made? What sort of pastoral care would he have offered people in their hours of grief? Then consider the sort of human being who knows all that about Tony Abbott, but still continues to acknowledge him as their leader. Now, to make it 100% clear, my gripe has nothing to do with ideology or policy. It's about Tony Abbott's fitness as a member of human society and about the judgment of the people who would accept that as acceptable in their leader. Now, what also shits me is that some of the defenders of Abbott said back, well, you know, remember this, lefties, when someone like John Howard dies. Now, there's a fair point in that, a time and a place and all that stuff, and I don't for a moment imagine that those on the political left, as the saying goes, won't rip out when, you know, John Howard eventually dies and just give him shit and his wife shit, all completely inappropriately. That is a fair point. But lefties, whenever I see someone use the term lefties in political discourse, I think pathetically ill-informed, patronising, name-calling cunt. I think it's complete arsehattery to reduce all politics to the left versus the right. But I will admit that the right seems to use many name-calling insults, lefties, greenies, pinkos, latte sippers, commies, and notice how they're always diminutives and patronising terms, not those on the left, but lefties, not the greens, but greenies. The left seems to have and use so few terms in return. So my conclusion, the left can support their views with logic and reason. The right, an inherently selfish worldview, has to resort to lame insults. The world, therefore, consists solely of two easily identifiable groups, the clear-headed logical left and the selfish, nasty right. QED. Well, that's, of course, the biggest load of bullshit you've heard the entire episode, and that calls for an edict. This is edict number 20. Whereas the entire concept of the left and the right in politics is nearly three centuries out of date, whereas even the most casual analysis would show that there is more variation within political parties such as the Australian Labor Party and the Liberals, just as there is more genetic and other variation within the so-called races than between them, then whenever you see someone reduce the analysis, nay, explanation of politics to the left versus the right, you are permitted to do the following. If that person should use left and right as explanations, then you shall say, "Look, fellow," or "Look, madam," as appropriate, "what you are saying is the most damnable bulldust." If they use diminutives and patronising terms such as lefty and greeny, or some right-oriented equivalent if such a thing is ever proven to exist, then you can append the following. "I'm afraid I shall have to ask you to step outside." That's for the first offence. Second offence, punch them. Third offence, spit on them, punch them, then kick them and kick them again. Fourth offence, whatever the fuck you like. That's all for the edict for now. If you'd like to leave a comment, you can... Actually, I'd really like to hear your comments this time. That was episode 20 of the 9pm edict. Now, I first started doing this podcast more than 2 years ago, but my plan at the time was to do 20 episodes and then see what happened next. I had this rather kind of grand idea that I'd do two episodes a week. And it's ended up taking 2 years to do 20 episodes. But it's kind of been fun. I've got some good feedback. And after 20 episodes, I just want to take a pause and decide what happens next. And I'd also like to think about that video program I did, Live Video to the Internet, Stillgerian Live. Now, you can get links to all that on my website. And over the next couple of weeks, I'm actually going to put all that stuff online in a kind of easier form to digest. But here's the thing. Kind of doing the 9pm edict was fun, and I think it resulted in some acceptable media objects. Doing Stillgerian Live was fun, and it too kind of resulted in some acceptable media objects. And I've been encouraged recently by various people to kind of keep going with both of those things. The kind of thing is, though, they take a lot of time to do. Hours and hours for every episode. It sounds kind of fluid when it's being listened to, being watched. But, you know, a lot of work goes into it behind the scenes. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, what would you like? Audio? Video? Live? Not live? Interviews? I mean, I'm not a bad interviewer. Should I put more into it? So this time, I mean, although I'm asking for comments, I really would like you to consider about what you liked about these little media things I did, and let me know. Because I will be putting in some solid thought to decide what happens next. Maybe working out how I can get someone to pay for it, which will make it have a higher priority than the kind of words I do for money. And yeah, I'd like to keep going. Tell me what you think. Go to the website and type in some words. If you'd like to leave an audio comment, Skype to Stillgerian or phone Sydney +61 2 8011 3733. The next edict will be whenever I bloody well get around to it, because this is the 9pm edict.